Hey everybody, welcome back to Imperfectly Poly. We're doing another cigar chat this time because, frankly, we enjoyed the last one.
And it's beautiful.
And it's beautiful outside. We thought this time we could talk about some poly misconceptions. So we brainstormed a little list of poly is this and that, which are incorrect. And just thought we kind of off the cuff talk about those. But as always, I'm Chris.
I'm Moni.
Danielle.
And Dawn.
And here we go. All right, Danielle, you got the list, so rock and roll. Poly is?
Wrong.
Poly is wrong.
Wow.
As a misconception. She just went straight for the big one.
No, that's the first one on the list.
So that was the first one you put on the list.
No, that was the last one I put on the list. She just typed it in the first spot.
I didn't type any of this. I just opened the...
You can blame me.
Chris typed it in the first spot. It's fine. Poly, it's a good one to start with. So if you've been poly for any amount of time and you're verbal about it or vocal about it at
all. Or really anything non-conventional ship-wise.
Sure, yeah. Sure. You're going to hear that's wrong. And then you'll probably hear a laundry list of the same things we came up with that we're going to talk about today as why. But why do people say poly is wrong?
Well, I think it comes from the idea that, you know, when you're taught, well, I mean, shit, when you're taught the birds and the bees and you're taught what, you know, how you should grow up, it's always, you know, one woman, one man.
The relationship escalator.
The relationship escalator, you know.
Which, if you're not familiar with that term, that's just the monogamy relationship escalator. You meet, you date, you get married, fall in love, you get married, you know, have babies.
2.5 kids and a white picket fence.
Raise your baby, send them to college, buy a house. Crisis,
break down, find the blonde bombshell, buy a Corvette.
That's not on the relationship escalator. And then you grow old and die together.
That's the kind of escalator they have at the mall that you can never actually use.
Right, yeah, because it's always
under repair.
The blonde bombshell escalator is always under repair at the mall. Okay, noted.
That's why we go to the mall so often.
Oh, I see. If that one's back in order yet.
Just statistically increase your chances.
I feel like you have a blonde bombshell. So are you? Right, Chris has a blonde bombshell. So is Dawn looking for a blonde bombshell?
Oh, no, I got a redhead.
Right?
Yeah. That's okay. Yeah, she's fragile like a hand grenade, so it's okay.
So, like, you know, the unicorn brunette and the redhead and the blonde bombshell. I feel like we should be covered, right? Like,
we're good.
We're good? Okay. All right, anyway, that was a
back on topic.
This is what happens when we are going to go off the cuff with no real notes. So, welcome to our diversion.
Welcome to our brains.
That's a good squirrel. What's next on the list?
I think you're right, though, about that. Like, everything we're taught from our, well, and I think it's maybe even changing. So, I say we. So I'm in my late 40s, mid to late 40s. You guys are in your early, like, late 30s, right?
I'm officially 40 now. Shut up.
Officially 40.
I'm the baby.
So our generation was taught through everything, through all of the media outlets, through all the books we read, all of the ways we're raised in various places like churches and schools and everything. It's taught very monogamously minded. So it's easy.
Even on top of that, it's taught man-woman monogamy.
Yeah.
Like, coming up, there was no
like, gay
two
marriage,
mommies, two daddies
right.
Situations yeah. going
and
on.
If your parents knew anybody that was that way, it was very hush-hush.
Yes. Yeah. And they moved away to some city because they couldn't live in the small town you lived in. Because
they couldn't function there because it was wrong to be that way.
And I'm really happy that our kids are growing up in a very different mindset. Because, I mean, we've already talked about, you know, we have one that's outly potentially bi, who's talked about, you know, being poly herself. And
well, between our seven kids, we've got
a
pretty large gamut.
Pretty diverse group of children for sure.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, our oldest two, we weren't quite at the poly emotionally invested part of it yet. So we were still very much in like the swinger, sexy, fun playtime. So we did not share that part of our life with them. And so they were raised in that sort of monogamy mindset, even though we've never been monogamous, not for like a single day that we've been together. But we raised them like that because that's what we knew. And we were diverging from it, but we didn't necessarily think that, that we wanted to teach them that that diversion was okay.
Yeah.
But when we got emotionally invested, when it became a relationship situation and people were becoming part of our, such an invested part of our lives, then it was like very eye-opening. Like, I do want my kids to understand that they can create the kind of relationship that works for them, like whatever that looks like. Or the kind of
family that works for them.
And the kind of family that works for them.
Yeah, you beat me to it. I was just about to say it. The big difference is that we're creating a different family dynamic. And I think that's actually another one of our myths is that, you know, Polly is destroying the nuclear family, right?
It is.
And, you know, I think it just redefines it. It's a growing, I mean, sure, it's not the, you know, man, wife, and 2.5 kids, nuclear family, but it's something so much better.
Well, I think, though, when you think about the nuclear family being kind of defined so narrowly as a mom and a dad in their assigned at birth genders, right, like married, raising kids, even that has been under some level of deconstruction for a long time because you have divorced parents and separated parents, and then you have, you know, people who are being raised by their grandparents and that kind of stuff. So that's all different than the nuclear family, but you don't really hear anybody saying that that's destroying the nuclear family, right? That's just them adjusting to their situation.
Right.
Whereas we are choosing a family that looks very different than what society deems as like normal.
Yeah. Well, and I think that, you know, I was reading something somewhere one time that was talking about the nuclear family and the downfall of the nuclear family. And of course, you know, a lot of individuals who want to talk about the downfall of the nuclear family want to point out, you know, LGBT as being part of that downfall. And it's not that. It's that whole thought process of, you know, our generation was raised to believe one way. And as we've grown up, yeah, the right way, quote unquote. But as we grew up, we started to understand that there are a plethora of ways that you can do things. And I think that, you know, the generation after ours started to understand that better and started to bring in more of the of that change to that thought process.
Do you think that happened because so many of our mothers went to work? So like the nuclear family is generally, when you think about that too, is there's a stay-at-home parent involved, a stay-at-home mother involved, right?
Yeah.
And then as women went into the workforce and there wasn't that kind of steadiness at home, do you think that had anything to do with that?
It's just so multifaceted. Being able to open your eyes to something beyond the quote-unquote norm, and just society becoming more accepting of something other than that religious-based man, woman, couple of kids, you know, that's the only way to do things. You know, very close-minded, I guess.
Well, that, and do you think it came from the, this may be unpopular, but do you think it may have come from the children of that generation watching their parents be absolutely miserable and deciding they weren't going to do that?
Oh, I would say there's seeking happiness. There's probably a lot.
Because I know that's part of my, you know, my baggage going into a lot of relationship stuff is that I don't want to do the same thing that my mom did.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I don't want to do the same thing that, you know, there have been too many people in my life, in my childhood, that stayed together because they thought they had to.
Well, yeah, because, and you then, know, we have the kids and we don't want to.
Right. And then they end up completely fucking their kids up.
Oh, yeah.
Or,
yeah.
I mean, themselves, like they turn into alcoholics.
Yeah. But then you have the kids that watch.
CSI crime scene.
Then you have the kids that grow up watching this. And they're like, I'm not going to do this.
Well, that's all they know is love. And so they grow up in this sort of dysfunction. And then as they get out into the world and they start to discover that there are other ways to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that kind of leads to the questioning of the traditional.
Yep.
Well, and I think that, you know, that's the problem is that, not the problem, but the solution is this break from this idea that there is only one way to do things.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, not so much our generation, but, you know, our parents' generation wanted to hold on to that belief so strongly, you know, and
I believe that's the generation, because that's the, you know, generation my mom is in and Chris's mom is in. And I know that Chris's mom, you know, talks all the time about the breakdown of, like, what happens when the matriarch or the patriarch passes mm-hmm. away mm-hmm. and you either have to fight to hold on to all of these traditions that your family has in place, or you have to develop something different right. because that person's no longer there to stitch it together.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of, you know, falls in that same thing where, you know, I think you're exactly right. That generation is the last of, you know, really, staying the course.
Right. Kind of holding those traditions.
The funny thing is, when I think about that, is that generation was also the generation of, you know, if something happened to your uncle, you know, your uncle lost everything. Well, you know, that generation was the, okay, bring him back into the house. You know, we're going to take care of him. You know, mm-hmm. we're going to get everything going again. And so you had these homes with, you know, potentially generations of individuals living in the same house. You know, and then there was this break with, you know, like our parents' generation and ours, where we didn't have that.
And where we moved away.
Yeah. Where we moved away.
I think where we moved away.
Moved away. Moving became so accessible.
Right.
Like being able to go across the country.
Right. Now, the funny thing is with poly and sometimes even, you know, ethical non-monogamous relationships, you start introducing that kind of back in. Except it's not, you know, your blood family.
It's not your brother and your sister.
Right. Family. Family.
Right. Right. You know, so it's kind of interesting when you look at that shift that's taken place there. So
that's an interesting
thing. I mean, that's something to think about. Like, I grew up in both sides of my family was big families, lots of cousins and aunts and mm-hmm. uncles and lots of time together as a family, blood tie family. And then I moved out west from Texas when I was 19 and we stayed out there for 13 years. So all of our children were raised out there separate from their big families, and so they don't have a lot of those same kind of
right.
familial ties like we did, and so we had to create our own traditions, and we mm-hmm. had to, it kind of gave us the necessity and freedom to do something that looks different, and then it just felt so familiar and comfortable and like mm-hmm. right for us.
Yeah. All right. What else What's is on next? The list over there, babe?
Now that we've gotten real deep into the American society problem. Polly is greedy.
Oh.
So I put that one on the list because on dating apps, more than once, I have received messages from other women and some gay men, several of them, where they're like, you're awful person because you're so greedy. You already have a husband and a boyfriend, and you're still out here looking for more of the men. Can you leave some of the men for the rest of us? And I'm just like, I mean, I don't want to be thought of as greedy, but I mean, you know, I don't.
I have never once had that problem.
I don't know.
I don't stay around on dating sites long enough, I guess.
Yeah, but you know, like this, just the concept of poly as a greedy lifestyle, like one is not enough, and we have to suck up all the men, suck up all the women, like take them away from everybody else.
Or more so like a lifestyle of indulgence.
Oh, that's you. I think that's a little different than greedy.
Was that Roman,
but
the Roman Emperor Caligula in his indulgence?
His indulgence ended up in people being decapitated. So I don't know if that's the same thing. I mean, unless you're talking about the times your soul gets drained from your body, that's a little different,
right? Sucking all the men. Oh, I mean,
so literally.
But I mean, when you think about it, it's really not greedy. Because here's the thing.
No, it's not. I said fuck.
Look, we. And if y'all are listening for PG content, maybe not this one. Not us.
Just Sesame Street.
But I mean, I don't think of it as greedy because look, one of the things we do well is share. Like if you like my boyfriend and my boyfriend likes you and there's some available bandwidth and time, I'm not going to say y'all can't try to connect. Right. I'm not like hoarding him all to myself.
So basically what Monty is saying is if you feel like polyamory is greedy, up your game.
I mean, you're not wrong. I just didn't want to say it out loud on a podcast. But the thought that goes through my mind often is
I don't have games. I don't know.
No, we're not. But the thing that does go through my mind often,
both of y'all have games.
When I get those messages is I'm not, what I'm doing should not affect your ability to get a partner. So like work on you.
Yeah. Quit blaming me.
Quit blaming me for the lack of your partners and work up on you.
And you make a good point. Because we share, you are not taking somebody off the market necessarily.
I am not. I am taking a portion of their time off the market.
Sure.
But if there's a connection there, by all means, y'all explore it. That's what we do. So it's not like I'm hoarding y'all and I got y'all in my dragon cavern, you know, my dragon cave.
You got a dragon cave? Is that what you're calling it?
It's really like a mermaid cave, but you know.
Well, you know what happens with mermaids, right?
That's, I know. I'm a better mermaid.
You wind up eating people.
I'm a better mermaid than that.
Never mind.
All right. Nope.
Next. Anyway, moving on. So I don't think Polly is greedy. That's why I think that one is a misconception.
Yeah, I agree.
Polly is cheating. Polly is not cheating because everyone has knowledge and consent.
Cheating is doing something without consent.
Right. However, but understand you can cheat in Polly.
You certainly can.
You can cross boundaries and you can cross agreements that were
made.
But as looking at Polly as itself, no, it is not.
As a relationship type.
I am definitely not cheating on my husband when I'm with Chris. That's definitely not doing that. Yeah.
That's the ethical part.
I mean, you might be if you took Chris to a racetrack or,
that's a real thing there. I mean,
took him to see Top Gun without you.
Or like a Harley dealership.
There's fighting words.
Yeah. Went and bought him a Harley.
Get you some that's grounds for divorce.
I mean, we're going to have a conversation.
But if y'all work, if the partners work together, then it's really not cheating. So Don didn't really want to take me to see Frozen. And Chris was like, fancy date night it is. And off we go. So.
Wait a second. It's not that I didn't want to take you. It's just, it's not my thing.
Okay.
Yes.
That's a PC way of saying it. I really didn't want to go. But he would do it if he got laid.
I mean, you know, if there was a benefit to it.
I don't even think so on that thing. Because he told me there's no way he would go with me to a Dave Matthews concert. So
he would have taken me to Frozen had I asked him to.
Oh, absolutely.
Taking me to. I mean, that's a thing, a partner does. But the thing about Polly is that you don't really have to take one for the team anymore when you have other diverse partnerships.
There's other team members.
Somebody gets called up from the minors to the majors.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
And that whole take one for the team. I mean, anybody that's come out of the swinger lifestyle, they know that.
Oh,
whole
Lord,
idea.
We have all taken one for the team.
We could probably do a whole we actually should probably write that down. That might be something we can talk about.
You can't talk about that because I don't think you've ever taken one for the team.
No comment.
Okay, let's don't sidetrack though. Right. Save it for the podcast. We'll talk about it.
Moving on.
All right. Polly is polygamy.
No.
Which is very different. It's not monogamy. Look. Sure, polygamy is not monogamy. But polygamy is multiple wives, right?
Yeah, so I don't know
starting
a whole ton.
Starting at 10 years old.
Yeah, I don't know a whole ton. And I know that the Mormon community, my understanding, and if I'm wrong, understand this, is that, you know, there is a sect of the Mormon community still out there that practices polygamy.
The LDS.
Yeah, and I know that for the most part, the Mormon Church has said
denounced all
this
of that,
is not a thing to do, but it is a multiple wife thing.
Yeah, it's wives. And there's also a multiple husband thing.
And if you don't know what we're talking about, HBO made a great show called Big Love.
And Sister Wives.
Sister Wives is on TV. Don't watch that. That's gross. That guy is gross.
I didn't watch that one. I just like the concept of Sister Wives. So
yeah, the concept is great. He's just gross.
But
also I like bro husbands also. So that's a thing. I don't want it to go just one way.
Right.
No, but I think Polly is not that.
Yeah. I think the thing is that polygamy has that negative connotation that comes along with it because there are some people who have done it in a very, very bad way.
Yeah.
With very young people, very religious, overt religious.
I mean, I may be completely speaking out of turn and, you know, this is my opinion, so take it for what it's worth. You know, back a couple of years ago, it was essentially, you know, underage sex trafficking with a religious undertone.
Mm-hmm. It may still be.
It was basically that, like, using your religion to do
something that is pretty gross.
Yeah. And that's not what this is. Like, everyone here knows what's going on with everyone else.
A full consenting age.
And everything everyone wants to do, like new partners that get brought in, there's typically enthusiastic consent from the other partners, you know, to do all
even
of these
things. Even if there's work required to overcome some personal, like, obstacles and baggage and shit like that. But essentially, we are all choosing to live in this lifestyle, and because of that
this
choice,
lifestyle is not being subjected onto us.
Nobody is pressuring us for this.
And with all this said, now, if you're a guy that's got three women that follow him around and there's no other men in the picture and you're all about it, cool.
Right.
By absolutely. Definition is polygamy. I get it. But that's not the kind of polygamy we're talking about here. And that's the negative connotation.
Yeah. Polyandry
that's the other way around.
Is the multiple husbands.
Yep.
With one female, with one wife.
And hey,
situation.
If you can make that shit work, congratulations.
Yeah.
Awesome.
However
awesome.
You can make your ship sail.
Yep.
Right, yeah. Absolutely. But I guess when we say it's not polygamy,
onward
is
hope,
that
Captain.
It's not those negative connotations and like the like you were talking about being in like a brought in against your will and
it's like
at
a
underage thing.
We're not part
like
of a cult. Well, I'm part of a cult now that I own a Jeep, but that's a different cult.
That's a different cult.
cult.
I'm going to start a podcast on my Jeep cult.
Jeep. Oh, Lord. Jeep cult members by proxy or by association.
My
like I'm a Raiders fan by
that.
Association.
My sister will be all over that.
Yeah. So rolling forward, this kind of works with it. It's like poly is a way to get more sex. I mean, it is, but that's not the...
It's not generally the
goal.
Catalyst for
it's
it.
It's not
the
goal or the... Yeah.
Like, and I think, too, like sometimes people... particularly dudes, men think that they'll get their wife to be poly so they can have more partners and have more sex. And what ends up happening is it backfires and the wife ends up with all the partners because we have titties. And other things. Yep. And he's kind of like left hanging out trying to find somebody.
Yeah.
And
that's very typical.
Yeah. Yep. I think if that's your goal is sex, it's...
Stay in a swing lifestyle.
Yes, swinging may be a better fit, which is still its own version of ethical non-monogamy, but it's not necessarily polyamory.
No.
Speaking of, poly is swinging.
No. Poly is not swinging.
So do we want to define it as the way we see it? Like
somebody define swinging.
Swinging is more the ethical non-monogamy without the relationship, without the emotional relationship.
So it's much more sexy,
it's
fun,
more like
casual.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I don't know.
But it's good. I think it's like friends with benefits. Right?
I was going to say, I see it almost as like the notch below friends with benefits.
Yeah. Cause like with friends with benefits, you know, we're friends. Like there's some type of ship there. It's a friendship, but you know, every now and then, you may feel a need that I have, and I'll feel a need that you have, type thing. With swinging, it's just sex.
It's usually just sex. It's very sexual in nature versus polyamory, which the way we kind of define polyamory is that we are in committed relationships with emotional depth and investment with other people.
And of course, we
multiple
take it
people.
That extra level to polyfidelitas, where we're not doing that swinging side and just sleeping around. We're you know.
Well, I think polyfidelity is like if the four of us were just not going to take on any new partners at all.
We can do an episode on the differences there.
And it might that might just be.
We still got to do the terminology one.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. I need to pull that up, but yeah, I think that can be kind of like a little bit of a fine line, like what do you think, what do I think, vocabulary kind of thing as well. But
my point is that we're
not out there.
We're not out
very casually.
Yeah, very casually. Oh, I'm a friend with this person. Let's sleep.
Or, you know what, I'm bored on the third Saturday, so I go to the bar and pick some guy I'm bringing home with me, right?
Or it's like, I've heard her mouth skills are amazing. Let's go try that out. Like, that's not,
tempting, but no.
All right. Poly is a way to save your relationship. Please don't do that.
So what do we mean by that? So you're in a
relationship.
Maybe y'all are struggling. Maybe you've gotten bored a little bit or in
complacent.
Cheating, so
caught yourself cheating.
That's the one. That's probably the solution, the common one is, oh, they are cheating, so they obviously have this other need. So it's, let's stop cheating and just open it up and find a relationship. That's going to backfire hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of how our story.
Well, I think
that I mean, one of the reasons I brought it to Don was because I was like, I mean, neither of us are good at being faithful. And what if we did this instead?
There's a difference there. I think that, you know, when you look at trying to use, and, you know, I belong to a lot of different groups on Facebook, a lot of poly support groups and a lot of, you know, poly this, poly that kind of groups. And you know, when you see it, and when I say poly is not a way to save your relationship, it's, you know, you have come to an impasse in your relationship where, yes, maybe one of your partners has cheated or you've cheated on your partner and got caught, what have you. And then you come up with this grand idea, this, you know, and I'm sorry, but I'm going to call it for what it is, this delusional idea that, look, if we were poly, then you can do what you want to do and I can do what I want to do and we can stay together, you know, for whatever reason. And you think it's going to be the way to fix what's broken in your relationship. Why did you cheat?
If you cheated because you have this desire, this part of yourself that wants those multiple connections and can manage them. One thing, if you cheated because you're not happy, if you cheated because your spouse is not giving you what you need.
But you also have to have the partner that is in the same boat, not necessarily going along to get along because they're trying to
make you happy or stay in the relationship. Yeah.
And understand there is, in my opinion, there is no good reason to cheat. Okay. Mm-hmm. And this is coming from a guy who has done it. So please understand. I mean, I'm talking from a position of understanding and a position of
2020.
Hindsight is absolutely 2020.
Well, I think growth is the thing because, I mean, in different life stages or things like that, it's a very different situation.
Right.
Like I would say right now, I would agree with you, but 20 years ago, would I have agreed
with you? And I get that. And the reason why I don't think poly is a good way to fix your relationship is because poly is going to bring out all of the flaws in your relationship.
Well, and you don't know that until you're in it, right? So you think that we're just going to open this up so that we can not have to cheat on each other. We'll give each other permission and we'll go out and everybody will be happy. But what you don't understand yet, because you're not in it yet, is how you're actually going to feel the first time that partner who has cheated on you. And now they go out and they get to bang somebody with permission.
Or the flip side is now you're in that place and are you doing it just because you can?
Or because
are you doing it because you believe
or
this lifestyle?
Are you doing it because you want them
to feel like you felt?
To feel like you felt.
Right.
Right. And so I just think there's a lot, like, it's very nuanced and
your
intention, you know, your intentions in your heart, they matter.
Look, here's my final 2 cents on it. Okay. If you are in a place.
It's like the Sunday Baptist goodbye.
Absolutely. That's my second goodbye. My second closing.
Second closing, Sunday Baptist preacher closing. Yep.
So if you are in a place with your relationship where you are either actively cheating on your partner or your partner's actively cheating on you, what have you, and you believe that poly is the way to fix your relationship, my suggestion to you, okay, this is my suggestion, is go to a counselor first.
Or take a break.
You know, before you jump into poly and get involved with other people, because once you get involved with those other people, you are going to do damage to those other people.
Yeah. If you don't at least have your shit somewhat together.
Right. And you're it's doing so much do. Worse than just ending the relationship that you're currently in and moving forward.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if you're already cheating, one of the pieces of that is you're doing something without other people's knowledge, which means you're not communicating very well. You're not saying your needs. You're not saying what's going on.
Right.
So what's the first rule of poly? You've got to learn how to communicate.
Oh, yeah. You also consent is big important. Like if you're doing that, you're putting them at risk without their consent. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like you're doing all of that without their consent. And that's a big part of poly as well. Yeah. So yeah,
my point is though, if you don't know how to communicate, you're going to just wreck people around you.
Right. Oh,
yeah,
poly is not going to be, it's either going to be super eye opening for you and you're going to learn how to communicate, or
it's going to be
you're going to be like a wrecking ball. And
yeah. I came in like a wrecking ball.
Yes.
And I think all of that works really well, except in the situation where the cheating has become a relationship. And so you're like, right. If it's just like sex, because for whatever reason, that need is not fulfilled in your current relationship, maybe it would be easy to walk away from that and kind of take some time with your current relationship and see if y'all want to reestablish or restructure what you have. But if someone's cheating and they've become, accidentally poly, like they've developed feelings and they're in an actual relationship with the partner they're cheating with, I feel like that complicates the whole.
Well, that's the whole situation. Yeah, that's right? A whole different bag of worms.
Big can of worms.
Yeah. So, but yeah, just, you know.
And not just in cheating, but just in like we've talked about, like if your relationship has gotten boring, so you want to spice it up a little bit. So you're going to go be poly.
Right. Yeah.
Try swinging first.
Maybe go to the sex part of it first before you get people, because most people who identify as poly, genuinely poly, they're looking for the deeper connection.
And they don't want to be your guinea pig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, and everybody is going to be that first time. I mean, that's.
Yeah, somebody's going to be their first time.
Yeah.
I know, but it needs to. I mean, I feel like that, though, like what you said, is someone who actively identifies as poly, give them the courtesy of, we're trying to figure this out.
Right. Versus, we're looking to spice our relationship up. Because that's a very different. If I was looking at this couple that I thought were cute and fun, and they say, we're poly and we're looking for a poly relationship, then I have to determine like how much of my time do I have available to develop, intimacy with two more people and a relationship with them. And if they say, we're just looking to spice our relationship up, I'm like, oh, 4 hours on Saturday night, we could maybe do that. Right.
And the other thing that just hit me in all of this, and we didn't put it down there, poly is not unicorn hunting.
Oh yeah. We can talk a little bit about unicorn hunting.
Yeah.
What's the other one? What's the boy version? I've seen it lately.
Manther
hunting. Dragon hunting.
Manther?
Manther
hunting. God have mercy.
Manthers and cougars are not unicorns and dragons. Different dragon situations. Hunting. Dragon hunting is when...
Oh, that's the guy
is
version.
Is the guy version of unicorn hunting, when the couple is looking for a guy to be with both of them.
Yeah.
And that's all that they're... Like, that's...
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong if what you're hoping to find is a triad with two of, whatever. If that's what you're searching for, great. But, the unicorn hunting side has an unfortunate negative connotation that comes along with it. Because, yep. I mean, there are let's be real. There are couples that are out there that are just looking for a threesome.
Yep.
And it becomes very negative because that they don't necessarily treat that other party as an equal.
Yeah. Right. And also, if they find somebody and in the beginning, the third person, the new partner, is attracted to both of them and everything's going well. But what happens if down the road, the two of them become more attracted, like the new partner and one of the old partners becomes more attracted. Yeah. And then all of a sudden there's less attraction with the other partner. And so then there's this like, well, what do we do with that? Do we get rid of it? If there was no availability for that to be flexible and kind of grow in its own path, then you end up possibly hurting that new person that you brought in.
Well, I think you said the whole getting rid of it. Right? So one of the negative connotations of unicorn hunting is that it's a disposable relationship.
Yep.
Right. Is
that's the negative connotation.
The negative of it is that if something were to go down negatively in that
it's always
ship,
the couple first.
It's the couple first, and you just get kicked out.
There's definitely... ethical unicorn hunting that's out there.
And there are women that are absolutely in for it.
And there are ethical unicorns that are all about it. But I was going to say the example, a person I talked to a while back, she became friends with, she was in, she's married. They wound up finding a girlfriend, became a triad. They've got kids together. And then ultimately the girlfriend that came in became much closer with the husband, and she began to drift apart. And it took time. They had, I was able to experience the whole transition with them as she basically became, she still wanted to be there for her kids and be part of the family, but really wasn't part of the triad anymore. And, you know, in the
end, reclassified.
They reclassified.
And, you know, she ended up, you know, defining herself more as just lesbian and was able to find a girlfriend. And the last time we talked, she had her new girlfriend and is quite happy in the new relationship.
I think that reclassification is so amazing when it happens, like when it happens like that. And I think it's so hard to do, depending on who's doing it, you know, like, mm-hmm. like if you've been married a long time and all of a sudden your situation changes because of new people that have been brought in, I think that that's harder to reclassify because you're kind of holding on to that history. Right.
Yeah.
Versus like if you've only been together a couple of years and maybe someone new comes in and there's some adjusting and reclassifying that has to be done. And how do you do it without feeling,
I think that's the whole episode.
Yeah. Like I'm not going to get too off topic. We're going to write these things down because I do think that's something we can talk about. Okay. So we did unicorn and dragon hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And Polly is not, what else?
Polly is going to mess up your kids.
And we have direct evidence. We have a whole
episode of that one.
Of how that's not true.
I mean, and so you guys understand, Bonnie and I have raised 5 kids. And at some point in time during the journey, our poly journey, they've all understood or come to the understanding of our poly lifestyle.
So 3 of them were grown.
3 of them
when
were grown,
they became
yes.
aware of it. But the younger 2 were young, like 10, 11 maybe. It was when we were living on the south side. So
boy 4 was a teenager, probably 13.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah. So
still young enough.
Still fairly young.
You know, and
that may be why he's had a harder time undoing the beginnings yes. of what we taught him about monogamy and stuff.
He would have been, 12 at the beginning of the...
He's, how old is he now? 20?
He's turning 20.
So yeah, he'd have been 12 at the beginning of the...
Yeah, 12, 13.
The previous.
Yes. Yeah.
And so then you go back another year. Yeah. Because that's when it really started, was when the first girlfriend moved in with us. And we really started having to decide whether we wanted to talk to them about it. And you can go back to our kids' podcast. I don't remember which week it was, but we went in depth on
how
it does not.
And it comes down to that whole
episode 7.
Seven. You want to know about kids, go listen to episode 7.
And it comes down to that whole, first of all, it's the, for us, I think it's the, not hiding anything.
Because kids are smarter than you think they are.
Smarter than you think they are. Having age-appropriate conversations.
Hang on. Maturity level
appropriate conversation. I would agree with that. I never heard that distinction until we started doing this. But
that's why I wanted to plug that in, because I really agree with that.
I think the biggest thing, though, is aside from that, is the first part, is not hiding anything from them. You know, now, of course, there's things that you're going to do that you don't want them seeing. You don't want them seeing sexy time. I mean, that's a given.
Right. But you want them seeing affection.
But you want them to be able to see that affection. And you want them to be able to see that you're affectionate with all of your partners involved.
Not just
I'm affectionate over here, but you can't see this aspect over here. I don't want you to see, you know, me and mom are still affectionate. You don't see that anymore, but you see me and this new person affectionate. They need to be able to see everything that's
See enough, and kids are going to start filling the blanks.
Mm-hmm. And if they
fill it in with
their own stuff,
wrong things, their own stuff, that could create any number of things.
And it creates distrust.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Suspicion, right?
Yeah.
It was fascinating to me just this morning. Em's daughter was, she was sitting in a chair across the living room from us, and Chris and me and Em were snuggled up on the couch, and she was just watching us be affectionate and kind of silly and playful. And I thought, how neat for her to get to kind of see that dynamic in action, right? Where all of this different mix of partners is just being very affectionate and sweet and caring about each other. And I thought, how can that be damaging?
Right? Like it's a beautiful thing. Like the last day of school was just here a couple of days ago.
Oh yeah.
You know, so, you know, what's Danielle do? She grabs the girls and grabs, you know, our, you know, boy five and off to the ice cream they go.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it's just one of those things. Like,
yeah, in the end, if you do it right, it's just more people to love the kids.
Absolutely.
Well, I think too, kind of what you were saying, like you said, the most important thing is that,
We don't hide anything.
That we don't hide anything. Yeah. But also, I think probably pretty equally important is that we don't push poly like monogamy is pushed.
Oh, yeah. No,
like,
no,
we
no,
do
no,
not
no.
sell this as the only way mm-hmm. that they should relationship. What mm-hmm. we try, and I try to tell my kids this, boy four in particular, and I had this conversation, and he was like, well, what if I don't want to be poly? I was like, all I try in all of the conversations we have, all I'm trying to do is to teach you that you can create a relationship that works for you and whatever that looks like. So if it looks like monogamy or if it looks like poly or if it looks like some sort of something in between, I just want you to know that that's for you to decide.
Yeah, I mean, and create what you want and be accepting of others for their decisions.
Yeah.
And I think when I look at stuff like that, I think the biggest success story that I can put my fingers on right now is going to be boy number two and his boyfriend, you know, his fiance. And the fact that, you know, they are currently looking for a third, you know, a female third that, you know, wants to be a part of them. And not just a minute part of them, but
like a lifelong commitment. Hey, let's have kids. Babies.
Have kids together.
Yeah.
We don't want to know which one of us is the dad. Yeah. We just want to all of us have an intimate, affectionate, loving relationship that creates children for all of us to love and raise.
And to me, when I look at that,
I think it's wonderful.
I look at that and I'm like,
it's beautiful.
Son, you're awesome. Like that teaches me so much more as a parent. And as a poly individual, when I see that and I hear that, and I'm like, good Lord, we did something right.
Yeah. I mean, their first...
And all I hear is like, bonus grandbaby.
Right.
Their first idea wasn't as great. It was like, we're going to get a girl pregnant, and she's going to have a baby for us. And I was like, whoa, kid,
hang on.
I was like, wait a second. Let's talk about this a little
bit. We
talked
about the legal ramifications
of
this.
Yeah, I was like, you can't just bring some random girl in and make a baby with her because, you know, but like, we can't
Wasn't the conversation like, you're not going to give my grandbabies a crazy mom?
They can, because there are women out there that'll carry a child.
They can, but that's not what they were talking about. They were not talking about surrogacy, which is its own kind of beautiful.
Right.
Right. They were talking about hey, will you have a kid with us? Great. And I'm like, no, I feel like let's don't bring in like some crazy off the street and get her knocked up, right? Like maybe we take a better approach to this. So the next time we talked about it was much more like what Dom was just saying, and it was really lovely, and then, I'm excited for them.
There's the times where, you know, where I'm sitting on the couch and, you know, girl one comes down and just plops right next to me and puts her head on my shoulder, and it's just like, I'm going to take a nap.
You're going to sit here and I'm going to love you.
Right.
When we went to Target the other night, she kept like holding my hand and like being super affectionate, holding onto my arm. And I was like,
that comes from the trust.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Because she can see we're not trying to steal y'all away from each other. We're not trying to, you know. Yeah.
Like M's daughter this morning's climbing up in my lap because she wasn't feeling well. And just... being as sweet as can be.
Yeah. And it goes back to that other thought process, like you said, Chris, is it just gives them more people that love them.
Right.
Yeah.
In this world right now, kids cannot have enough people in their corner.
No, absolutely not.
I agree with that completely.
Because, I mean, as much as a parent, you want to think that you're the person, you've created this safe space for your kid to come and talk to you about anything. They're not.
No.
And when you put them in a family dynamic where they have two extra, four extra, six extra, whatever adults that they can take problems to that aren't their parents, they're going to take those channels. They're going to do those things.
Yeah. And then you trust in those individuals.
Right. And then you throw in on top of it, you know, think about the kids that all they wanted was a little brother.
Yeah.
You know, the whole time they've been growing up, all they wanted was a little brother, and they got this crazy little sister that drives them absolutely bananas.
Are you talking about girl one?
No, I'm using an example.
Although boy five did get a couple of extra sisters.
Right. Yeah. Or you know, think about boy four.
Yeah.
Who him and girl one are like two peas in a psychotic pod.
Yes, they
are. That's very true. When they get together,
that girl can get him to do just about anything. Hey, jump off the balcony. Oh, girl.
Exactly. So it
will it be funny? Yeah, I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, or, you know, it, and it's that kind of stuff. Like, not only the parents that they get, but they get these
siblings. Even if they don't become so much as siblings, they're connections,
they
right?
They get these people like that cousin, share the same experience.
Like, sort of cousin-esque.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. And, you know, and for us, I mean, girl one and two and boy four and five are very close age-wise.
Oh, yeah.
Like, boy four may be a little bit out of that, but at the same time,
when
he's
we
still
first
close
got together,
enough.
He was close enough because he was still at home, yeah.
Right?
He's still in high school.
It's
so.
Close enough that they all have these, you know, relatable experiences. Like taking them to for ice cream the other day, they're all three talking about these teachers that they can't stand, and they're so happy they retired. And you know, all of this
it was
situation.
Really fascinating the first time we took them anywhere together, and boy five and girl one. And their music tastes
mm-hmm.
was so similar that they
well,
were
you
just
get
like
Africa coming on the radio. Right, and they're from, both in the back like jamming,
and we're like, "Wait, what?" And then there was Fred Astaire. No, the one that sings the moon song. Anyway, boy five loves.
Oh
him.
My god!
Oh, Fly Me to the Moon.
Yeah, who sings that?
That's
Sinatra.
Yes,
Sinatra.
Yeah.
He loves Sinatra, which is. Great. I
and girl one does too.
Yeah. It's just like they're eclectic music.
And she's sitting there, hey, have you heard of this guy? And he's like, no. And now that's
down
somebody that's on
hole.
His,
yeah.
his list. But yeah.
Yeah. So
to get back to the idea.
Is poly detrimental to children? I think if poly's done badly, it
absolutely.
Certainly could be. It no worse than like divorce done badly and a revolving door of partners in a divorced mom or dad's life or anything like that, right? But when it's done well and with love and intention, yeah, I don't
see
I don't think so.
Poly itself does not hurt kids.
Not
right.
in any way, shape, or form.
It's the or the immaturity of partners.
Yeah.
Will hurt kids. All right, last one.
Go real deep on the last one?
We've already touched a little bit on it, but it's poly is against religious teachings. And if you read your Bible, it's actually not.
So here's my take, and I've been saying this I have been saying this from the day that I started to understand poly.
Can
that
we the give pagans did it right?
Yeah, a little background.
Can we do a little background first?
Sure.
So I was not raised in the church per se, but I brought myself to church in the fifth grade, and I have been very spiritual, religious, pretty much my whole life. So there was a lot of battling with my personality all through high school. I didn't go to church for a very long time. And then Don and I got involved in a really amazing church, that taught us some really excellent principles of spirituality for real life. And I've kind of developed my own spirituality and faith through that. I have a lot of questions about religion that I get stuck on. But I have read the Bible. I've been to church. Don, I think your story is very similar.
Yeah. Yeah. Very similar. I mean, I was brought up in a Southern Baptist church, where every single Sunday morning,
hellfire
Sunday
and
night
brimstone.
And Wednesday was hellfire and brimstone.
Everybody's a sinner.
Everybody's
going
sinner.
To hell.
They're going to hell.
Yeah.
And it didn't, and it was funny because it was the same thing over and over and over again, even though, you know, I believed in my heart and confessed with my mouth about Jesus and I felt like I was saved and I know I'm saved, but every single Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday, I was going
sinner.
To hell.
Going to hell.
You know, so.
Let me tell you about the Southern Church of God.
This is Danielle's background. So,
they're the snake ones, right?
The snake handling, speaking in tongues. Like, yeah, that's how I grew up.
And on top of that, both of us went to a Southern Baptist school for college.
Yeah.
Which, so a little side note about that. I find it so interesting.
Hopefully boy five might.
That we went to a classified Southern Baptist college, who is not now.
No.
They actually broke with the Baptist Southern Baptist
God
Convention.
God forbid they had co-ed dorms.
But interestingly enough, being in that school, one of my professors, because you have to take Christianity, right? So part of the class, my professor was someone who had been she's an ordained Methodist minister. However, because she was a woman, she couldn't hold any sort of important office within the church. Mind you, this was 2001. And things may have changed now. I'm not Methodist, so I don't keep up with that. But having that religious background growing up, having the in church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Mondays and Wednesdays,
ooh.
You know, hearing her say in that class, reading the Bible is much like reading the Declaration of Independence. It was written in a historical context by people who chose what to put in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's someone else's opinion of what Christianity needed to hear.
Well, and it's supposed, you know, it says that it's written through...
it's the inspired word of God.
The inspired word of God, but it's still written through human filters of fear.
And there were seven books that
never made it in.
Someone picked and chose what went in there.
Right. Well,
so that's, and when she said that in class, as an ordained Methodist minister who preached down the street every Sunday morning, I'm sitting there having this crisis of conscience of like, okay, if this person who is someone's spiritual advisor basically just said, take this with a grain of salt and remember that it was written in a historical context. But take the the moral stories out of it of be a good person, do good things, kind of thing.
So that's
if this person in that capacity is saying this, like what the fuck have I been doing for the last 18 years?
So that's your history, and I think Chris, you have some history with the church and religion too, don't you?
My house growing up was two doors down from the church I went to. So we walked to church every Sunday and walked back. And so we were very much there. My mom still is very religious.
My mom is too.
Grandmother and, is too.
So I grew up with a very traditional viewpoint of it all. But I broke quite early because it, for me personally, it was going on Sundays and everybody being all religious, but one, you know, and devout. And then all of a sudden it was like, let's get the heck out of here so we can go binge drink and watch NASCAR.
And beat our wives.
I'm like, something's not adding up here.
Right.
And so I guess the point of it all is that each of the religions that are out there have these quite structured teachings that you may follow, you know, to the letter of the law. And if that's your thing, awesome. Whatever you need to follow. My takeaway from it all is,
Just be a good person.
Be a good person. Be kind to those that are around you. Love your neighbor. And
do good things in your community.
So that's, I just wanted to give a little background so you guys listening knew kind of where we were coming from as we approached this topic, because it's pretty, it's really sensitive and controversial. Yeah. So, now go.
Okay. So picking up there, then, you know, when we started doing the whole poly thing, and I started, you know, I've read the Bible 5 or 6 times cover to cover. You know, and I'm a firm believer that it is the inspired word of God written by the hand of man. And we can all agree, regardless if you're into religion or not, first of all, religion will screw up everything. And when I say man, I mean everybody is fucked up, you know, plain and simple.
For all of history.
Okay. So when you look at the Bible and you start looking at these mighty, quote unquote, mighty men of God, they were all individuals who at some point in time in their lives had either multiple wives or they had a wife with multiple concubines.
Harems,
you know. And
they were still mighty men of God.
But they were still mighty men of God. They were still doing God's work. They were still doing all these wonderful things, and they were still going to heaven. So to be told that, you know, first of all, marriage is one man, one woman, and we're going to take one little section of the Bible in one little section, one little word, one little phrase, and we're going to use that to go against homosexuality.
We're going
to
use it as a weapon.
We're going to use it as a weapon, yeah, to go against homosexuality, out of complete context. I have a problem with that. You
but
know,
we're also not going to hold people, we're not going to stone people who've been divorced, and we're not going to, you know, like throw people over the cliff who ate some pigs, right?
You know, like, and I know a lot of people in the church will want to come and say, well, you know, Jesus came and, you know, his words were, you know, I didn't come to destroy the law, but to fulfill it. Well, that's all groovy, great, and grand. The fact of the matter is, at some point in time, there were still these mighty men of God who had these multiple relationships.
Yeah.
So if it was okay for them, why is it not okay for me?
Well, see, and to me, it's more kind of what Chris was saying. Like, to me, the whole New Testament, the whole, like, beef meat of the New Testament is love people.
Oh, yeah.
That is what we are instructed to do.
Yep.
We're not instructed to judge them. We're not instructed to, you know, to condemn them or to correct them. We are instructed to love people. And right. like that involves things like being kind and being understanding and being accepting and trying to understand, you know, trying to be, to see things from their point of view and to support them and things like that. So mm-hmm. To me in Poly, that is like the whole thing that I do is love.
Or to not even have people. To see it from their point of view, just yeah. to.
Love be able them. To
yeah give to them. Love
you don't
them.
Have yes. to agree, just don't be a dick,
right?
Right, yeah. But that's my yeah. thing about I mean, Poly. When you say Poly's Lord, against religion, religion, to me, the if the religion is love people, that's really all I do in Poly is just love yeah. more people. I love and, my and, partners, you know, their partners, their kids, our
well,
friends.
Well, there are plenty of things that people do on a daily basis who are in church every time the door is open,
yeah.
Well, that do well, many, way many, worse things.
How many of them, Catholic priests?
Have I was going to say, we're not going to.
I'm just saying, but these but individuals how many people, are still.
How many deacons at churches and people who go all the time are on their fifth wife or right. fifth husband?
Right.
Right.
It's like, and nobody's going, well, that's against that.
Or
that's
how
wrong.
Many, you know, and it going get back to yourself. That whole like societal thing of like, mm-hmm. you know, stand by your man or whatever. Like, how many people do you, could you stand in front of the pews at First Baptist of whatever city church, right? Or First United Methodist or First Presbyterian or whatever, and look at all of these pews. And if you were a mind reader,
oh,
right?
Good gosh.
How many of them would you look at and you hear one or the other or both parts of these couples who are talking about how unhappy they are,
yeah.
or thinking yeah. about how unhappy they are, how I mean, they wish they could be anywhere else with anyone else or whatever.
When the preacher preaching about couples says, I'm not talking about your spouse right now, because he knows or they know that that's where your mind is going to go is, oh, mm-hmm. that's my spouse. He's talking about right there. That's, mm-hmm. that's they, I have heard that in so many mm-hmm. marriage and couples sermons yep. that they stay and they sort of like, caveat that with like, I'm not talking about your spouse in mm-hmm. case you're wondering, mm-hmm. right? Because yeah, of that think, very thing. Like,
mm-hmm. I think the fact that the thing is that I stand by the fact and I stand by my statement that religion will fuck everything up.
Well, and there's only think, monogamy because of religion.
Right.
And I would think one step for it, you know, the zealot religion.
Yes. Okay. I'll go religion with you. The zealot religion will fuck everything
the people
up.
Who use their religion as a weapon.
Right.
And or as a reason to be judgmental.
You know, it is still possible for you to have a personal relationship with whatever higher power you decide it is. Buddha,
Sky Daddy.
Jesus, Sky Daddy.
Sky Daddy.
Sky Daddy. That's the best.
I love the Sky Daddy.
I thought that was really funny.
You know, it is absolutely okay for you to have that personal one-on-one relationship with that individual and still live your life the way you want to live it.
Because honestly, at the end, who's accountable?
Right.
Just you.
Because, you know, at right? the end,
the
when
pastor's
you,
not the one that's going to let me through the pearly
no.
gates.
No, when that final moment of your life comes.
One of those guys that had nine wives will be.
Right. And you blink. I mean, it's true. You know, but
that's a good point. There's another way of looking at it of like, God is blessing me with three amazing women in my
right?
life.
There you go. You know, I mean, but at that last moment of your life, when you take your last breath or you blink your last blink and they put you in that box and they throw dirt on top of you, if you have to go and stand in front of somebody, it is just going to be you standing in front of that individual accounting mm-hmm. for your
talking
life.
Talking about while the movie of your life plays
right.
and y'all talk about
my
it.
My
right?
mom ain't going to be there.
Right?
My dad mm-hmm. won't be there. You know, nobody
the
in my Poly family
gonna
is going to be there. All the preachers that I've had in my life are not going to be there.
Children.
It's going to be me. So with that understanding, I'm going to live my life the way the Bible said. And that is to love my neighbor like I love myself. And it's to do my best to raise kids that'll be productive members of society and not assholes. And I am going to try my best.
That's in there, right?
It's in there.
It's in there.
Yeah.
I think it even simpler than that. I'm going to live my life in a way that I think is right.
Yeah.
To be good to those around me.
Yeah.
And in the end, if I've lived my life the way that I think is good for everybody around me and been a good servant, if I get up there and they said that it's wrong, I am 100% okay
yeah.
with my decision, because in the end, I have made other people happy. And if yeah. I have to go to hell and pay for that because I've made other people around me happy and I lived my happy life, fuck it.
Right.
That's I will funny. Add to something you just said, like you were kind of half joking, like maybe God blessed me with three wonderful women. I'm going to tell you right now, I thank God every day for both of you.
Yeah.
All the time.
You know, I mean,
and that's, the people that come along yeah.
with me. And I mean, like, and Chris, you're absolutely right. The thing is that, you know, when I die, when that day comes, and at my funeral, people can stand up and say good things about me, like absolutely want to stand up and say good things about me, then I did it right.
Yeah, that's the legacy that I want to leave behind, that I was a kind and loving person that people wanted to be around, that you could be yourself around.
So much more now that she's on medication.
No.
That's not nice. Look, Joker, you're the only one that's not, and you probably need it. Right? I'm going to start grounding up my Zoloft in your coffee and see what kind of changes we see.
On my next closing here, I want you guys to understand.
God, we got to beat the Catholics to the buffet. Like, come on, man.
I'm almost done. Right. I just want you guys to understand.
NASCAR's starting in 5 minutes.
We are not sitting
the
here.
The Braves game's at 1:35.
We don't have any beer. Oh, we got non-alcoholic beer. We'll get some non-alcoholic beer.
They got a 4 o'clock first pitch. Come on.
If this were Sunday, it'd be 1:35. Thank you very much.
But it's not Sunday. It's Saturday.
Anyway, get to your closing.
So this is the truth.
Get to your closing so we don't have to cut all this out and post. Right.
We are not here to steer you in any way, shape, or form on any kind of religion that you should be.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, if you have your own personal beliefs. I think that's why I wanted to
kind of introduce where we were coming from.
Yep.
Because we all have very varying levels of faith and belief and...
And just understand, I haven't, if, for some of you who are listening to this, I don't know you, but I still love you.
Aww. Aww.
I got a bubble and it's hard to get into, but hey.
Trouble's bubble's a real thing.
And sometimes, even if I do know you, I still might love you. But
be nice.
I don't have to like you to love you.
I don't have to like you.
Like you to love
They're
you.
Two different emotions.
That's true, too. Yep,
absolutely.
And I don't have to like you to want good things for you.
Right, there you go.
I think that's it.
I think the biggest difference in our spiritual and faithful beliefs is probably mine and Chris's, which creates some really interesting middle of the night conversations about Bronson Moses and did.
Oh, God, it's so fun.
Yeah.
That could be a mini episode.
Hey, if you guys want a great Facebook group to join, it's the Dinosaurs Against Christianity. It's great.
So... In conclusion, poly is not any of those things. When it's done well, it can be so just fucking lovely. It's unreal.
And at the end of the day, just go forth and do good things and be a good human. Person.
Be a good human.
Be a good person for those around you.
Tell people about our podcast and come back next week.
All right. We're Imperfectly Poly. We're on all of the interwebs, imperfectlypoly.net. And
send us a message if you want. If you have any topic ideas or you have something you want to hear about or you want to
share, be a guest speaker.
You want to be a guest speaker. You want to share your experience from listening with us. We love any kind of feedback anybody wants to provide. And you can find that feedback form at imperfectlypoly.net.
Where I believe you can also get your Imperfectly Poly swag.
Yes. Can you do that yet? Do we have that clicked together?
It'll be there before you hear this. We'll work on
it. We'll work on it.
And if you want cigar recommendations, just reach out. Me or Don will help you out.
Or if you have cigar recommendations.
Oh, even better.
Let us know.
Yes, because there are currently cigars happening.
I got about an inch left.
Yep. And if you want to come and have a cigar with me or Chris, hey.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right. We're out of here.
Y'all.
See you.
Bye. Toodles.